You're listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amswell.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amswell. I'm Brent Smith alongside Shane Stetsny, and we're going to go over a lot of the great action at the World Championships that happened in Crandon, Wisconsin. And Shane, man, what an understatement to say that it wasn't exciting, because there was so much going on.
And like I talked about all season leading up to that race, keeping an eye on all those, especially the sportsman points battles that were all decided at Crandon, it just infuses the weekend with so much extra drama. The stakes are so high, and all the sportsmen racing for their world championship rings as well on Saturday, just unbelievable. Every single race has some level of excitement when it comes to world championship weekend, and I love it. And you add on top of that another record crowd. Weather was unbelievable. You had all the pomp and circumstance, the Kiss concert and the parade, everything that surrounds that whole weekend. The added show with the Ultra 4 USA series coming into town. Class 11's in town. It just makes for a huge weekend, and the people behind Crandon, they continue to grow it and outdo themselves every year.
Yeah, they really go over and above and beyond, and they impress the hell out of me every year I go there. And I mean, it seems like yesterday we were just grabbing onto that fence, and it was a wooden fence back in the day. I mean, it's just grown so big that those fans were unbelievable to stick out in that heat. I know on Sunday we didn't get a chance to broadcast, but to sit out there all weekend, I forgot what it was like to just be in that dead heat. I mean, the loyal fans, just the record crowds, like you said, in the great racing action. The sportsmen put on one hell of a show. And like you said, the Ultra Fours, I mean, we were in the back, and that's one heck of a show they put on. And the weather was beautiful, and I can't say any more. This race weekend could not get any more bigger.
Well, let's talk some specifics from World Championship weekend. Fittingly for me, being a buggy dork, let's talk some buggy racing. What a weekend for Connor Schultz. Takes the world championship in light buggy. A couple races later, picks up his first ever win in 1600 buggy, wins the ring race in that one as well. Fantastic weekend. Still falls 1 point short of the points championship. Colin now a three-time champ.
Dude, unbelievable. The kid is just a man possessed. He's so fast. Anything he gets in, obviously he can win. And to lock down two rings in one day, I mean, that is over and above what you just think you're going to do going in a weekend like that. They have a lot of confidence, but to jump up a class and to double down, I mean, the kid's on his way to big things. And I enjoyed the heck out of the buggy classes, especially the light buggy division is huge. But you never know who's going to win. The competition gets better and better, but the Schultz twins always find their way up on the podium.
Yeah, Schultz twins took 11 out of the 12 wow. race wins on the 2023 season. Like I said, Colin held on for a one-point win over Connor. That's just got to light the fire a little bit hotter still under Connor Schultz to be capable, obviously, of winning on the biggest stage. I think that's three world championships in light buggy, not counting the one he won in 1600. Still can't get that points championship.
Oh, man, it's going to be a long off season for those twins. I can't imagine being a twin myself.
Yeah, every family dinner, he's going to be staring across the table at Colin like, come on, man. Like, what could I possibly do differently? Seven wins on the year for Connor, by the way, and he still fell 1 point short. And you know what it all comes back to is that race in Bark River where the two twins tangled a little bit, and Connor ended up parked under that chain link fence.
Yeah, that was a big turning point. And hey, things like that happen, and to see that out of those two was really surprising. But they both want it that bad, and with that many cars in the class, I always say it can help you and it could really hurt you. And I think that one big deficit, and we know now that that's what costed him. And going out of Bark River, he knew that would have been a challenge. And hey, to have seven wins is huge, but that overall championship's what they want to get.
Well, another class that came right down to one bad day for a championship hopeful, 1600 buggy. We had John Fitzgerald on the podcast leading up to the World Championship weekend. He had a somewhat comfortable points lead going into Saturday, and then disaster strikes. He ends up with a transmission issue, couldn't get the car to shift anymore, and he's relegated to running around at the back of the field. His teammate, Mike Seifelt, goes on to win the championship. How about that? Mike Seifelt was winning buggy championships when we were kids. Now it's the year 2023, and Mike Seifelt, last year, world champion, this year, points champion.
Yeah, that's crazy to even think about, because I remember as a kid watching him just dominate, and him and his father been around the sport a long, long time. And for him to do that in this era, man, that can't, you can't say much about the driving skills that come out of his camp. And he's in great equipment, don't get me wrong. Bruce Fraley really puts together good pieces, but you still have to drive it, like we say, and that's what he did. And to come out on top is huge. I mean, he's so emotional. You can just tell how much it means to him.
Talking about how big World Championship weekend is, the emotion that we saw from some of the drivers was, I thought, absolutely fantastic. And again, it's a long season. It's a long off season to keep the program going, and then a long summer, some fast turnarounds in the middle of the season. You got that 2-week turnaround between ERX and Lena, another 2-week turnaround to Bark River. That is the dog days of the schedule. It's a lot of work that goes into these, especially on the sportsman side of things. Like we talk about that all the time. Well, another sportsman driver who had heartbreak at Crandon, Ben Holcher, carried the points lead into the final round, and then disaster strikes him. He ends up pulling into the hot pit. He's stuck running around at the back of the field, fell from first to fourth. And Joe Machosik, who has had his share of bad luck over the last couple of years, things fall his way. He steals a championship in the final round.
Yeah, that's what Joey does. He's always consistent. He's there. He's fast when he needs to be fast. And he capitalized on an issue with Ben Holcher. And that's what you have to do. You have to be on top when they have a bad day. Because if anybody knows what a bad day is, Joey does. And for him and his father to get this championship and lock it down, that was huge for them. And he keeps on telling me he doesn't want to move up to any other class. But at the same time, the kid knows how to drive, and he really drives that class hard. And I mean, there's a lot of great talent, but Joey did what he needed to get done.
I know coming into this year, when we were talking about Joe Machosik, going back to the beginning of 2021, which was the first championship that he won in that class, all the way through last year, if you just pretend that Crandon weekend where he flipped and wadded that truck up, if you pretend that weekend never happened, he would have won the championship last year in 2022. So except for one bad rollover, he's that close to being a three-time champ. I mean, we're talking about a really dominant run. The most recent three-time-in-a-row champions in that class were Scott Beauchamp and Dan Beauchamp.
Yeah, and that's what they come to do, is try to be the best of the best. And I think Joey, he was on his way to do that for the three-peat. And, you know, bad luck strikes Joey once again, and that's what happened in the past couple years. But Joey's fast in that super stock truck division, and Ben Holcher, don't take nothing away from him. He shows speed every weekend.
You know Ben Holcher is going to come back fully, you know, fire is going to be fully lit under him to be that close and just have it slip away at the end just with a mechanical issue.
Oh,
you know,
tough,
he was
man.
In position. That was a dogfight between those two and Belanger and Braden Beauchamp, and that came down to the final round, and Ben Holcher was in the position where he just needed to finish, if I'm remembering right, something like eighth or better. The other three guys in the points battle didn't have a great day that day either. They were kind of stuck battling through the middle of the pack. And racing can give you so much, and then it can stomp on your heart right when you least want it.
Yeah, and look what happened. Look what happened to Ben at Anago. I mean, you talk about him losing the points just by a little bit. Look at that day. If you would have scratched that with a top five, it probably would be no head turn for that championship. But that's what we have in Champ Off-Road, and that's why I love it. I mean, you and I, we could call a race every day the same guys, and I believe in Super Stock Truck we'd have multiple different winners.
Yeah, and I think the way that all played out with those four drivers that all had a shot at it coming into the very last round of the season, I mean, those guys aren't going away. It's going to be, you know, Super Stock Truck. The future for that class looks fantastic, because Belanger, he's going to stay fast. Braden Beauchamp, we saw the improvement even from the start of this year to the end of this year. And obviously, Machosik, now a two-time champion. And like I said, Ben Holcher, more fuel for the fire. We know he is as fast as anybody in that class. And Nick Bing had a bad luck year too, and I expect him to bounce back.
Yeah, and that's what you do in the off season. You have to go back to work, do what you need to do to make your truck faster, watch old tapes. I mean, that's what I had most fun in the off season is try to learn off of what you did wrong and what you could do right, because you can't do nothing about people that drive out of their butt or drive uncontrollably. You just got to try to pick away from those people. But you as a driver and yourself, you need to go to work and do what's best for you. And a lot of guys and girls are doing that in our sport right now, and it's making it very, very challenging to win a race, and that's what I love about it.
Well, one driver who was up to the challenge this year from the 170 and 200 side-by-sides, Tanner Tebow, locks up that championship. Only had two wins on the season. I just found it a little bit fascinating. He's one of the older cars out there, one of the 170s, and it had two of the 200 side-by-sides finish in second and third, Raymond Denninger and Cody Kranz. What a great season for that kid. It's been fun to watch him going back to last year when he got his first ever win in Champ Off Road to see, and we've talked about other drivers that you can like plot their improvement from one weekend to the next. And he was one last year that got way faster towards the end of the year from the start of the year. Great to see him lock up that championship this year.
Yeah, it's great to see new faces, but especially when you see them put the hard work in and the way they drive and they stay confident all year. These young kids just try so hard because it's not easy to stay focused. You have your buddies and your friends out in the parking lot or out in the pits you're playing with, but yet when they strap those helmets on, a lot of these young guns are going to be our future, and I think it's looking really, really bright, Shane.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then you mentioned consistency. That's huge in every side-by-side class. And like I said, he only had two wins on the season, just strung together those top five finishes. And at the end, when the dust was all settled, he stands above everybody else. You know, another driver who set out this year to be consistent, finish every race, and it won him a championship without winning a race. Bill Berger, Pro-Am side-by-side champion, pulls the Greg Gerlach, as I call it, championship with zero wins. How about it?
Yeah, that's awesome. I remember talking to him after the weekend was done. I think you were right there, and he was just smiling ear to ear. He doesn't say many words, but I congratulate him as well as you did, and he definitely earned that one, and it's easy to pick him out in the class because he's always moving forward no matter where he starts. I mean, if he starts in the top three, it's tough to get around him because he's very smooth, consistent, and has one big heart for this sport, and I think it really showed this year.
Yeah, just a closer look at the snapshot, his stats for the year. Three podium finishes in 12 rounds, but you look across that points grid, bunch of fourth place finishes, bunch of fifth, sixth place finishes, and that's been the story of Pro-Am side-by-side and Sportsman side-by-side all, you know, the entire 4 years of Champ Off-Road, is you don't necessarily have to just go out and run away with every race, but if you can finish every race, and that's what Berger did, that can be enough.
Yeah, and you have to finish, honestly, to even have a shot at it, and that's what being consistent's all about, is if you can't win every time, you got to be there in the end of the year points, and a guy can win, what, seven wins? Look at the Schultz twins. I mean, you can win seven times.
Yeah, Connor had
times.
Seven wins and fell short.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, Kyle LeDuc loves to say, if you win, the championship will come to you. But hey,
not always.
Like I said, Thanksgiving is going to be tough. So is Christmas, all the way back through. They'll get over it, but those guys are so fun to watch. And that's what it's all about in this championship hunt, even in the side-by-sides, is you got to be there in the end.
So obviously, we're staying focused quite a bit here on Sportsman Racing. And we'll have one more episode that'll come out before we head down to Mid-America for the final rounds of the Pro Series. But there is one pro driver I want to single out from World Championship weekend. Friend of the podcast, Kyle Cooper. Only his third weekend out in Pro 2. So the Pro 2 points race on Saturday, 22 trucks made the field for that one. Kyle finished ninth. Then he goes out on World Cup Sunday for the Pro 2 World Championship. Sixth in that one. That is a great weekend for him, for being his third weekend out in a truck that they're still trying to figure out, for one thing, and still have plans to cut apart, lighten it up a whole bunch. Basically kind of running what he brought to the racetrack, goes out and finishes sixth. That's incredible.
Oh, it was amazing. I loved watching it. You and I were up in the top of the booth and getting to watch Kyle Cooper go to work with some of the best in the business. I mean, he was banging fenders with Ryan Beat and playing in the field. Yeah, Matag. I mean, how many laps we were tapping each other going, hey, man, look at Cooper. But that's what it's about. It shows a lot of daylight for a lot of these guys in the sportsman division to have a shot. Because remember, Kyle Cooper, he was super stock truck champion. Now Barglund, he's running his truck doing very, very well. And you watch Kyle go into the Pro 2 division and do this good. It says a lot for our sport as we're doing those stepping stones. And Cooper, he knows how to drive. Kudos to him and his team. I know his father's a big part of it. And they're just smart individuals. I can't imagine to cut the truck up that much.
Well, you know they got plans, though. They got designs on making some changes. And
for sure.
Man, when again, that was his sixth ever race in the truck. He's not even close to, you know, what you would call comfortable yet. You know, we talked to him quite a bit, and he would tell us, you know, yeah, felt a lot better today. And you can kind of think less and just drive a little bit the more comfortable you get. But still, that's only six races in the truck. And he's, like we said, he was out there battling out with Doug Matag for position.
Yeah, he's definitely getting comfortable. I remember talking to him at ERX Motor Park, and he definitely is like, oh, man, you know, jumping the super stock, you really think about where you land it. And here with the Pro 2, you just send it. And he's like, you got to get the confidence and the balls to just put it to the floor because it can take it. And I think I watched him, and I know I did throughout the year, progress. And now to see what he's done in a short period of time, they got to be very, very excited for next year.
Well, and we talk about drivers all the time. You can learn quite a bit running out by yourself at the back of the pack, but you start mixing it up with the established guys, the fast guys and gals. You can learn a lot from that, too. You kind of get the trial by fire a little bit. Iron sharpens iron, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Oh, for sure. And you learn. And that's what you hear Kyle Cooper say. He's just like, yeah, I just sit behind them and try to learn what they're doing to see how you flow the truck. And you have to. I don't care if it's videotapes or being in the truck itself. You have to critique yourself. Don't criticize. Be constructive. But at the same time, you got to be better. If you want to be great, you have to put in the work.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you know who always puts in the work is Amsoil. Champ Off-Road fans, remember to visit Amsoil.com for all the products that protect and maximize performance in all your vehicles and motorized toys. Use the convenient Amsoil product guides to find what you need and get fast shipping directly to your doorstep. Amsoil, run with us. Well, our guest on this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil, he's a former Pro 2 champion, former buggy racer, still a buggy dork at heart, and wears a lot of hats around the racetrack. Mike Vandenhoevel. Mikey, welcome.
Hey there, guys. First-time caller, first-time listener.
But you have been the probably the most name-dropped person on the entire podcast. I think you get brought up, like, for every three podcasts we do, you get mentioned on, like, two out of the three.
Yeah, that's marketing right there. That's all business strategy. Trying to, like, pad some pockets a little bit, throw my name out there. It works.
Well, like I said, you've worn a lot of hats over the years. You know, grew up at the racetrack, became a fabricator, a buggy racer, multiple time truck racing champion, including Pro 2. You've built trucks, you built buggies, and now you're what, a Pro 2 consultant? What is your job title? If you had to, or can you narrow it down to one job title at this point?
Yeah, I think I can. I mean, I think overall, my job is to help people win races, or at least help people be faster or improve their program. So like, that's like an overall, every day of my life, that's what I'm doing in, you know, in the shop or at the racetrack. So, you know, I've had a lot of great people that I've worked with, and you know, we're able to, the more we do, the more I'm able to learn and kind of pick up momentum that way.
What does a typical work week look like for you? I know a normal guy clocks in 9 to 5. I know your hours go crazy, but like, what does it look like when you enter the shop to when you close the doors to go home at night? What does that entail?
I mean, lately it's been crazy. Summers are always crazy. All the people who chose the path of the race life, you know, especially for us in the Midwest, we know that basically in April till September, we know, you know, that we're going to be basically going all out. So, you know, we'll get to the shop 8 in the morning, and depending on the day, I mean, normally the earliest that we get to leave is 8 at night, and we've got a couple different crews that come in. There's normally two of us in there during the day. One guy will punch out, and then lately we've had a bunch of different teams working in the shop, so I call it the second shift will come in, and basically we're just handling whatever is needed. And I mean, it's always a thrash in between weekends and stuff, trying to get prepared the best that they can. So I mean, we'll be there Monday through Sunday. It's basically whatever it takes. If we got to be there 16 hours a day in between races, we will. If we have to do no sleep till Brooklyn, we'll do that.
Are they all on a paid clock or a lot volunteer, or how many full-time employees during the summer do you have?
I've got one full-time guy, Dalton, who's been great the last 8 months or so. I'm not really sure, but the rest is basically, I try to work with teams as much as possible, where a lot of the local guys that come in, you know, I don't necessarily want to, you know, if I have somebody's truck in there, I want to be where I'm most useful, which is, you know, designing and fabricating and trying to, you know, make the most impact with the amount of money they have to spend. So then I'll, you know, invite the teams in to come and do, you know, whatever maintenance and stuff that they need to. So really I just try to accommodate what people's needs are. And if they need us to do, you know, if they want us to build an entire truck turnkey from scratch, we'll do that. I'm thinking of Michael Meister in between Bark River and Crandon after his big crash, like the thing was just totally destroyed. And he wasn't even at first, you know, considering, well, like kind of debating whether he should even attempt to make Crandon. So we'd work on it during the day. And then Michael and his crew would come in after work and stuff every day. And we'd work till him, or work with him till late at night.
Does that grind throughout the race season? Like, that's got to take a toll on you. Cause I know, even for me personally, not the work I do just to broadcast races is way less taxing than trying to maintain race cars. At the end of the season, I'm spent. Like I unplug from racing for a long time after the race season's done. What's that like for you to grind that hard for basically half the year? Do you try to unplug at the end too?
Yeah, for sure. I'm looking forward to getting Oklahoma over with next week. And then, you know, normally I'll take a week off or whatever and just kind of recover health wise and mental wise and stuff, and try to take care of some stuff around the house that I've been ignoring for 6 to 8 months, and, you know, kind of get the honeydew list back in order. And then it's definitely a grind. This last year, since last year Crandon Labor Day, we just never stopped, really, because we added on to our shop and stuff, and it's just been nonstop for about a year and a half now. So I'm looking forward to kind of sitting down and sorting some things out.
So one thing I've noticed is, I guess over the last maybe 2 years or so, you're really widely respected around the pits, and now you really go out of your way to push for more stringent safety requirements and better built trucks. Was there a tipping point or like one event that pushed you towards being more safety minded than you already were? Was it like when Matt Gerald got hurt, or was it just a collection of incidents that made you realize that some trucks were not as safe as they could be?
I would just say it's kind of an ongoing thing, because the more you work on stuff, and especially I do a lot of repair jobs and do a lot of the dirty work that, like, if somebody has a bad crash, you know, they have to bring it over to us. And then, you know, you just learn a lot once you see the aftermath of how forces affect things, and, you know, how things crumple and how, you know, things will move. So it sucks to have somebody go through, you know, a bad wreck or get hurt or whatever. But if you're, you know, always looking for a way to make something better, that's just kind of been the goal. So like just over all these years of of doing stuff. I've just found a lot of things, and then talking to other teams and builders, and there's also a lot of like really good safety companies, you know, that working with us, because off-road is definitely one of the more destructive forms of racing.
Mm. It's crazy to think, though, over the years, I mean, just being your friend and Shane being your friend, like, we've seen all the effort you put in. And I mean, if somebody crashes, I instantly think of your name. I'm just like, damn, you know, he should have went to Mikey, and hopefully that truck stayed together enough so he's safe. And over the years, you've seen so many trucks just get destroyed, but yet the driver walks away. So, I mean, that says so much for innovators and guys like you that go to the next level to make sure they're safe.
One of the ways that you've innovated and one of the things you've pushed for is the Z-Bar. Can you explain what that is for the untrained listener?
Z-Bar or V-Bar or whatever, I guess. The debate is kind of raging in the pits, I guess, because I don't know. We've had different instances where somebody would roll over and your roll cage will not collapse fully, but it'll bend or bow down, you know, along the driver's head area and stuff. And there's a bunch of teams that have been doing this along with me, and just putting an extra vertical support tube in one or two places just to try to eliminate, you know, that force from squishing the cage down. So it's definitely been a big help. I mean, there things like that only comes from being able to have it happen and then realize. I mean, I guess I could definitely say 100% certainty that some of these things that we've been doing have worked, because we've had some bad wrecks on vehicles that we have, you know, applied some of this stuff to, and see how, you know, the rest of the roll cage or even the driver's door area, like, kind of collapses and that stuff stays where it belongs.
Yeah, and we talked to, when we had Zach Sikowski on the podcast afterwards, we talked to him for quite a while, and he's one of the drivers who, especially after his crash last year at Crandon Labor Day weekend, is now, you know, an even bigger advocate of that extra bar in the cab, because he flat out told us, he says, I think that bar saved my life.
Yeah, I didn't want to put that out there, but yeah, I mean, since you already did that, I kind of agree with that. I think it would have been a little bit more ugly situation. So you hate to see somebody prove it, but holy crap, was I glad that we did that.
Does that take a lot of time to put one of those in? Like, so if a driver's out there that needs it done and wants you to do it, what would that take, a weekend?
Yeah, if that. I mean, most cases, most of the time, some of the seat clearances and stuff are different, and it's a little bit harder between the body and the seat and stuff like that. But I mean, generally, it's not that much work. I could probably pull it off in a day or two at the most between that. Sometimes you have to add more structure to the door just to kind of handle the load path, where, you know, sometimes just adding tubes isn't enough, and, you know, where you could cause a problem somewhere else. So, I mean, you have to kind of look at the entire structure of the chassis too. But I mean, most of the time it's really not that big a deal, you know. And it's definitely not, you know, as racers, everybody's always like weight conscious and you know, they're focused more on the speed and stuff like that. Right. We'll worry about some of this other stuff later, and it's 20 pounds and
right,
like a day's worth of
your head.
It definitely works, you know. It's kind of a no-brainer at this point.
Right, and it makes it 1% more difficult to get into and out of the truck. And the trade-off is enormous safety, yeah.
The thing was, when we did that with Zach, we were fitting him into his seat and stuff, and we talked him into getting a really good containment seat that was custom-made for him. And that's my go-to. Like, I wouldn't want to race one of these trucks without it. And so we did that, got him fitted. You know, it was a little bit of a chore getting him into the truck, because we went at that time he had Jeremy McGrath's truck, so he's probably like 6 inches taller than Jeremy. So, you know, it was a lot of work to, you know, we had to clear out some stuff in the cab and stuff, but when we did that with Zach, he was a little bit concerned about getting in and out, and I actually just like notched a tube and fit it in there quick when he wasn't looking, and I had him fit check the seat one more time, and he actually got in there without even knowing, you know, that the tube was in there. And then I showed him, and he was just like, oh, I guess it's okay then.
So, Mike, earlier you described your job, broadly speaking, as trying to help people win races. And you had a really great weekend, and the people in your orbit had a really great weekend at Crandon and World Championship weekend. Light buggy, four different cars that you built were on the podium. Connor Schultz won the ring race. Colin won his third straight championship. Your nephew Carter won a world championship in mod kart. In 1600 buggy, Connor got his first ever win, and that was in the world championship race. Michael Meister, whose car you basically almost rebuilt the whole thing, he won the world championship. Chad Rayford won his world championship in Pro Spec. And then Mickey Thomas was top qualifier and did enough to stay in the points chase going into the final rounds. That had to feel like a huge payoff for you. We talked about the grind of a race season, but to be at the end of it for the sportsman and have that much success, that had to be a big feather in your cap.
That was just an unbelievable weekend for, I call those the Flying Dutchman umbrella teams. Definitely unexpected, but you know, when you have all of these people that are kind of my home crew, you know, are put so much into it. And I mean, I know every team does, and you know, there's a lot of really dedicated sportsmen, you know, crews out there and stuff, but you know, it's just, you know, we're so nonstop here. And as far as like the Schultz boys go, like, believe it or not, I don't really, you know, aside from when we built their cars, you know, we got them through the first year or two, and those guys have kind of been off on their own. I trust Connor to take care of my 1600 buggy, and you know, they'll come to me occasionally and ask about tuning something or you know, maybe a new part or this or that, and I'm, you know, on the weekends, on the race weekends, those guys are pretty much all on their own. I spot for Carter, you know, I'll come over to his pit and check on him and kind of try to nudge him in a direction here or there, and then just kind of make sure he's prepared. And we talk a lot about, you know, what to do, like spotting wise and how to handle, you know, different things on the track. But my focus on the race weekends is at Mickey's camp. And you know, we're watching the races as we're working on the truck and stuff. And all of a sudden these guys are really just clicking off all these wins. And I'm like, there's no way this is real. You know, like that's pretty crazy to just have everybody out of our shop. I didn't know how long that momentum was going to keep up. And then it ended pretty quickly with, you know, Mickey's, you know, we qualified fastest on, that would have been Thursday. And then had a really, really rough race in the points race Saturday. And then everybody, you know, everybody saw the crash Sunday morning. So the luck ran out pretty hard and fast there. So, but I mean, all the other guys, it was insane. It was an emotional roller coaster, to say the least, on Sunday.
A lot of work for you for the Mickey Thomas truck. I mean, is that going to be a lot of late nights, or have you already fixed it?
Luckily for me, Mickey's got himself a really good support system and a good team where I'm pretty much there when he needs me, and he's got a couple full-time guys, and there's a guy named Joe Driver who hopefully somebody will tell him that I gave him a shout out, because he's one of the hardest working dudes in the pits. And they pretty much, I went up to, you know, to check on their truck and stuff, and it wasn't as bad as you probably would think. It definitely had some serious damage, but they were able to get it all figured out, and I think they're even going to get a couple laps on it before we go to Oklahoma.
A lot of trust, though, between you guys, it seems like, because if you can just show up on the weekends and help out there mainly, I mean, for you alone, I mean, knowing you all the years I have, like, that must be hard for you just to see the truck once in a while after a crash. I mean,
yeah, it's, you know, we definitely, it's hard. You know, Mickey was fine after the crash and stuff, and he ended up on his own going to the hospital to get checked out, you know, for better safe than sorry and stuff like that. But it's kind of rough, you know, having the truck sit there in a big heap. So, you know, the guys kind of, you know, there's nothing we can do to fix it. We knew we weren't going to race later that day, but you know, I came up and visited them afterwards just to kind of help them assess the damage and stuff. And they're pretty capable team. So I think they, I mean, I think at this point they've got it pretty much sorted out.
So what actually is your role on Mickey's team? I mean, how, when you're at the racetrack under his awning, are you really hands-on with the truck, or are you more focused on bigger picture stuff, or are you helping Mickey himself? You know, how, where are your hands in the whole operation?
I would say all of the above. I mean, at first, first he brought me on, and I just kind of talked to him a lot, and you know, obviously spotted for him, and you know, we do a lot of watching video and you know, talking about the track and talking about dirt and just kind of assessing, like, every day, how can I help him be the fastest truck that day, or how are we going to win that race or that qualifying session or whatever. So, and this year I'm a lot more hands-on, with the truck, and I think they've learned to trust me pretty quickly on, I mean, obviously I've been around for a while, but it's, you know, there's a lot of new, you know, new personalities and new people around, but, you know, Mickey's great to work with. The team's awesome, and the family's awesome. And, I mean, honestly, he makes the job pretty easy.
Does it feel good for you? I mean, do you, every day you go to work, does it just feel like you're at the shop again?
Actually, the race weekends are kind of like the reward for,
oh, wow.
You know,
wow.
Yeah, the race weekends are, you know, can be grueling. I mean, you pretty much go into it knowing you're going to be there, whatever, 6 or 8 in the morning, you know, until, you know, you don't leave till the thing's ready
it's
to go.
8 in the morning.
You know, yeah. If it's 2 in the morning, you know, I mean, depending on what happens, you just, there's no excuses. You got to get it done. So my best description of what really anybody on the team is your job when you're on a pro team, your job is to eliminate excuses. So when you get out of the race and something went wrong and you're like, oh man, if it wasn't for that, you know, we would have blah, 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 did this. Well, how do you not have that thing happen? You know, so we do a lot of kind of planning for different situations. You know, it's at a high enough level now where you really have to foresee some things happening. And there are, you know, as chaotic as some of the races are, you know, there are some things that are predictable. So, you know, we just kind of talk a lot of things out and just make sure we're prepared for anything that may come up.
So you've worked with a ton of really talented drivers, and you were one yourself. What do you see in Mickey himself that makes him such a great competitor? What is it about? I mean, he's obviously wicked fast. He's still right there in the championship hunt going into these final two rounds. What is it about his makeup that, you know, makes you put your trust in him?
Mickey is the silent assassin. It's that gets a lot of laughs in camp. He really is a machine. It's like a lot of people will describe, you know, drivers that way, but, and I've been around a lot of drivers, but he, I mean, he really is like a Terminator. Like he can kind of turn it on and off. You know, he is easily the world's worst invert picker. I will say that. you know, that's always a, you know, he, I mean, he's consistently, you know, one of the fastest trucks, if not the fastest. So anytime he does get fast qualifier and it's time to go pick that pill, where, you know, he wants to go run and hide and not deal with it a lot of the times. And that's honestly one of the biggest things that have kind of bit us this year. But, you know, it's just stuff that you have to overcome. And, you know, we've done enough good things where we're still in a good position to make a run at the championship.
What's their mindset? What's the family, the team's mindset going into the final rounds? I mean, they have a great shot, like you said, but are they really confident they can do it?
Yeah, Mickey's a very confident driver. He believes that, you know, he can get it done every day. And we all definitely believe that. And, you know, I think it's true. I mean, when you watch Supercross and stuff and they talk about, you know, riders, you know, all of a sudden, you know, they're clicking off wins and, you know, they say, like, you know, this guy's riding with a lot of confidence and stuff. Like that's pretty much his mentality every day.
It's really gratifying to hear you talk about his confidence like that, because Brent and I talk about drivers having confidence a lot, and it sounds like we're making it up, but there's really something there. Like, you have to be 100% confident in your, not only your own abilities, but in your team and the equipment to even have a shot, to even think about being fast.
At the level that these guys are at, you know, if you're one of these, you know, top guys, you definitely know that you've got what it takes. It is really cool if you see somebody like get their first win or whatever, and you know, you see how emotional, like I'm thinking about Henderson, you know, when he got his first win, he was like super emotional. He was like close for a long time, and then you see that happen and stuff, and then all of a sudden starts like he's like one of the guys to beat, you know. And it's true. It's like once you break through that, you know, I was the same way I raced too. Like I struggled for a long time and just kept, you know, it was just a grueling like process of finally getting some success. And all of a sudden the momentum just picks up.
So Mikey, let's talk about your future a little bit. You're obviously extremely busy now and you pour your heart and soul into all the different roles that you have in off-road racing. I mean, do you want to continue on this path? Do you ever have thoughts about getting back behind the wheel, or have you made your choice as a behind the scenes guy at this point?
So I think that I'm on my path that I'm on. I think I've pretty much made my career choice, and I think I'm pretty happy with that. It's just as gratifying for me to help other people improve their programs and building stuff and working with people and then winning these races and knowing for sure that the knowledge and, you know, all the work and understanding, you know, that's gone into it has made a difference for other people. I obviously learned a lot from my racing days, and that's, you know, being a former driver, I definitely believe that gives me a big edge as far as, you know, how to talk to and how to, you know, deal with some of these other pro guys and stuff. So I think I was pretty satisfied with what I did, and we'll probably leave it at that, I guess.
I mean, even with that 1600 car sitting in the shop, I mean, do you ever just stare over at it and think really hard about it?
Oh, yeah. You know, okay, if we're talking that, we can talk buggies all day here, because that was the idea. We bought that. You know, Connor did most of the work, and we had, you know, a couple of the other guys that helped in the shop, helped finish it with Connor and stuff. And you know, there's a couple of sportsman only races and some local, you know, some local racing going on. And that was the whole idea. And that kind of didn't work out. But then Connor just decided, okay, I'm going to race it, you know, in Champ anyway. And then all of a sudden just did really good. So, you know, I definitely would jump in the buggy. I'm really kind of hoping that there's some kind of, you know, these sportsman only races can kind of pick up some momentum, and, you know, hopefully there's something sustainable that can happen, you know, where the local sportsman racer guys can have their own thing. I mean, that would be really great. I just, you know, it needs a lot of organization and stuff. So, you know, if those things keep happening, yeah, I would definitely try to get out there. I would have to tell everybody else that I'm punched out for the day so I can put the fire suit on.
It sounds like what you're saying is being a buggy dork is something that you can't wash off yourself.
There's A, that, and B, like, it costs a lot of money to race pro tour.
Right.
So that's definitely the I don't know how deep I should go into this, because I want to say I don't know how hard I should be slamming people right now. how much more topics are we going to cover here, because I could go down a rabbit hole.
Brent's the one with time constraints, but
yeah, Brent.
What I'll say about buggy racing is, yeah, you definitely, you know, I love calling people out for being buggy guys and stuff like that, and it's just a way more, you know, for me at least personally, it's a chance to go out in a more relaxed way and kind of, you know, enjoy, you know, the reason that a lot of us start racing is just for the fun of it, and yeah, you know, and a lot of us, right, like myself included, got into that trying to become a race car driver and build off of it, but at least, like, you can still have fun with it. That's where I would be at it with the Pro 2 stuff. It's so ungodly expensive,
stressful,
it's not realistic. You know, the other thing is, once you get to, you know, there's some pretty intense sportsman racing going on out there, but the other thing that I don't know how competitive I would be able to maintain myself at in Pro 2, just based off of how the racing has actually changed a lot in the last 3 to 5 years, and it is way more brutal now. Like, it is, every single race is like a cup race. And these guys are like duking it out at a level that is, I mean, sometimes it's like shocking to see how these races unfold and the amount of carnage that is caused, you know. And it's just not something I don't know if I would be willing or able to do.
Sure. It feels to me like Pro Light, Pro 2, and Pro 4, we've reached the point where pretty much everybody in those classes has absolute top-notch equipment. They're all extremely, extremely skilled. And now everyone's just clawing for that last half a percent to be just a little bit faster, a little bit tougher to beat.
Yeah, I mean, this is real deal pro racing. I mean, these guys, you know, they have so much invested into it. And, you know, there's so much on the line now that, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's, you know, what am I going to say here?
I mean, the stakes are so much higher now.
Yeah.
You can't just outspend the next guy because everybody is investing a lot of money, like you said, into it. And like I said, everybody's got top-notch equipment. Everybody is working on their racecraft in every possible way, you know, racing simulators or running motocross bikes, building practice tracks at their houses. Like, the margins are so slim that the only advantage you can get now is just being more aggressive.
It's definitely at a, you know, at a new level. Everybody, it's always, you know, elevating, you know, the budgets are, in order to do it, I mean, it's just a lot of effort, and you need an entire, you know, huge support system. And I mean, you gotta be prepared. You gotta be testing in between races. You gotta be testing in the off season. You know, we're going to be building new parts and testing different ideas and stuff like that, like almost nonstop at this point. And then all of that effort and all of this work and everything gets shoved into like one 15-minute race, you know, and then all of that want and all of that effort and desire and everything like that just kind of gets unleashed. And yeah. You know, and sometimes it goes bad.
Entertaining as hell to watch, though.
Yeah. Entertaining to watch. Not so fun to fix.
Well, right. That's easy for me to say from where we sit.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Brent has a truck sitting there that he's trying to get together just to join that party.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Mike, one of the reasons that we wanted to have you as a guest on this one, and there's no good way to segue into this, but the racing community lost one of our own. Corey Podolsky passed away Sunday night after World Championship weekend. I know that you had gotten to know him really well. He had his truck in your shop over this past winter. I guess let's reflect on C-Pod a little bit. What kind of impact did he have on you in the span of time that you got to spend with him?
Oh man, me and C-Pod were just getting started, man. He kind of came barging into the shop, and we were converting three pro specs at the time, or you know, three pro lights into pro specs. And he's like, "Hey, how about a fourth one?" So then we just kind of added him to the mix, and then you know that was probably December, and he was in the shop like all the time, you know, from then on. And I didn't really even realize how close he was to the shop, but so I mean he was in there almost every day with me, and we had a really good community of different teams and people in there, so everybody's kind of, you know, helping everybody with stuff and trying to figure out this program. And he was just such a good dude. He had such a good attitude, didn't take himself so seriously, and it made it fun. And that's probably how I connected with him the best. You know, I like to kind of be the one that keeps things light, you know, in the pit and mm-hmm. and in the shop, and he's right there with you. You know, it's just like he knew that, you know, I want to go racing and see how good I can do, but I'm not doing it if I can't have fun and, you know, and enjoy my time with my friends.
You know, one thing that I noticed about C-Pod, and I didn't know him all that well, but you can measure that a person is a quality person by how many friends they have and the quality of the friends that they have. And it seemed like he had a lot of friends at the racetrack. He meant a lot to a lot of people. And I think that speaks to his character, that he was, you know, he was a very friendly, easygoing person.
Yeah. Yeah. Really popular dude. The pit that they were with is a really, really fun place to be, where I got to visit them at the pit one or two nights over the Labor Day weekend and stuff. And Lemke's and actually it was it's a kind of a big community, because Rayford and the Twins were right across the road, like yep. directly across. and Lemke's and Alcox and those guys were there, and
it's a big family.
And, yeah, it's just like a big, you know, a great big group.
You and I were hanging out with C-Pod on Sunday night at Crandon, with a much larger group of people, like you said. You know, first at Zane Roberts' place just outside the racetrack, and then went back to his pit with him. But, you know, that was really the first extended amount of time I ever spent with Corey. But yeah, I mean, it was nonstop laughs. It was classic bench racing where everybody was giving everybody a hard time, but all completely from a place of love and friendship. And
our normal, hey Shane, hey,
yeah,
our three normal. It's having a good time.
The kind of friends that you like to keep at the racetrack, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, for him, just the fact that he made that podium on Saturday, and that's really, I mean, that he knew that he wasn't necessarily, you know, a top guy going to go and win the race, and he was, you know, he kept, you know, kind of working on his program and his driving and stuff, but
sportsman racer spirit.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, that's what it was, man, and just, you've never seen somebody so ecstatic about getting third place, you know, and like just the cheers, you know, the fan base that he had automatically up on the podium and stuff was just so cool. So, I mean, just, you know, for him to go out, imagine having 5 days worth of hanging out with all of your best friends, doing the thing you want to do the most, and then getting on the podium, and then that's it, you know. Like, what a way.
Yeah, I've said that in private conversations, you know, if there's any kind of silver lining you can put on it. And like I said, you know, you and I were hanging out with him on Sunday night, you know, just a few hours before he passed away. And I think I even made the comment to you that I know before I left that pit area and went back to go to sleep, that one of the last two or three things that came out of his mouth was laughter. And I think it's important for people to know that he was what I know of him. From the few hours we spent together hanging out around that campfire, just an absolute great guy.
That's how I ever knew him. I mean, I only talked to him a little bit, but man, we had that little bond for the last couple years, and just he was just a jack off like I was, man. Like, we just liked to have fun, and he would talk crap, I'd talk crap, and I was proud of him. I remember talking to him at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm like, dude, you know, and we were up in the announcer's tower, I remember, and I still remember when Shane sent it down, and he said, I told my guys I'm just going to send it, you know, and I remembered that earlier in that day. Like, he did lay it all out on the line, and, I mean, he did a wonderful job, and granted, man, you helped him to get that truck to where it performed, and he must have been ecstatic, man.
Yeah, I mean, he was talking, you know, he kind of called his shot, because he said, he was telling everybody, he's like, I'm going to run this race like it's my last race. We're hitting the podium. And he was like, just adamant. And, you know, I was hanging out with them the night before, it would have been Friday night. You know, I don't get a lot of time to hang out with my people at the track and stuff, but I'm just like, well, I don't know if I'll see you tomorrow night, but, you know, congrats on the podium. And we were kind of pre-celebrating. I told him that's all. That's how much I believed. And dude, like he raced it. He raced all weekend like it was his last race, because I'm sitting there waiting to get in the spotter stand, and he is coming through turn one completely on the rev limiter, never lifting. And I didn't know if he was going to blow that thing up or get third, you know. And it was like,
yeah,
he really did run it like it was his best, you know, and it was like a movie, you know, the way it all, you know, went down for him.
Incredibly sad, and that's going to be a guy that we definitely miss in the pits, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and I will say too that I want to add, like, you know, this is kind of a totally different deal that you know, we've never really had this happen specifically, but, you know, anytime we lose somebody, like, the community, you know, there's a few hundred racers, so there's like maybe a couple thousand, you know, extended, you know, teams and families and stuff like that. Like, all of these people, as soon as this news hits, it's just like this big machine, like, that just gets turned on, where people are, you know, all of a sudden there's like hats being made and shirts and like benefits or whatever. There's all this stuff just starts happening. There's not like there's a committee, you know, it's just things just start popping up. And, you know, that's a silver lining to me, is you just get to see how close this you know, little racing thing we've got going on, you know, is, and you know, how special everybody thinks of it.
Yeah, it's really cliche to say that we're like a big weird family, but
we are.
When the rubber meets the road and you know, life happens, it truly works out that way. And it is like a weird big family. I mean, in any family, you've got maybe cousins you don't get along with and a weird uncle or something, and the racetrack's no different. There's people that maybe you don't, you wouldn't go out of your way to hang out with, but so much respect, and everybody's kind of moving in a common direction. And I think, you know, when something bigger than racing comes up, like you said, everybody can come together really well.
Yeah. And I mean, even, you know, with having all of C-Pod's stuff at the shop, you know, we had to figure out, you know, with his team and, you know, the people around his pit, we're you know, making a plan on getting his truck home and all of this stuff. And this was like Monday at noon, roughly. We finally left the track, and then, you know, a couple of people called me, and, you know, I called one or two people to tell them the news. And that was, I don't really feel like talking to anybody else, but by the time I made it back to Appleton on Monday, there was, I don't know, six or eight people, racers that showed up to my shop, and just because, you know, they don't know what to do, but they want to help with something. And all of these guys just stripped the truck down, washed all the panels, knocked all the dirt off, washed the whole truck. And, you know, since then, it's kind of been a revolving door of people that have been taking care of it. We had to fix a couple of things. And now it's back together, and so we can have it on display Saturday.
It's encouraging that, like we said, though, that our people rally around one another. Well, hey, Mike, we appreciate your time. Again, there's no easy way to segue out of that either, but we appreciate you taking some time with us, and best of luck to you and the whole Mickey Thomas Motorsports team in Oklahoma, just a little over a week away now.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. See. You know, what kind of moves we can make, and try to get through the season strong. And I'm sure it'll be what's going to happen next year again right away.
It never stops.
Race life.
Well, that's it here on this episode of the podcast. Our hearts go out to C-Pod and his family and the whole racing community. For Shane Stetsny, I'm Brent Smith. We'll talk to you next time on the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by AMSOIL.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by AMSOIL.